work session started. Your floor.
All right, and I have a pen somewhere. Ah, for this. All right, so we're expecting our transportation consultant, Larry from Transpo, to come, but he and I were both coming back from Burlington just now, and there was a pretty substantial accident that he might be in the traffic still.
Wouldn't Burke be more helpful today? I would have guessed Burke. It would have been a birthday today.
No, I would say that Burke is actually going to be more appropriate next time at the next council meeting. And the reason why, and that's an excellent question, because our goal today is to talk to you more about what could be the higher bounds of what the impact fees could be, recognizing that the council may wish to say, all right, we know that that's the high end. What is something that we feel more comfortable with? Similar as what we did before. We had a high end of $3,600 that we could have charged if we had paid for Thornton more through impact fees. Here's Larry. But we decided to go down to $2,300 because it felt better. $2,300 sounded better rolling off of our tongues. So
feelings are important. Yeah.
Feelings drive these things. So we're anticipating that there's going to be a subsequent discussion where we say, now we know what the high end could be, how do we work in other things? And that's where Burke would really come in by saying, now we know that we do or do not have TBD funding. We know that we would have this much additional revenue coming in through sales tax and all of that. Transpo would certainly be able to help with, and I can tell you right now, with WashDOT, what's WashDOT's contribution financially. Right now, they're saying that it's zero, and likely with interest, it's going to be zero in about 5 years. So that's what we're going to have to play with. But the primary reason tonight is to make sure that you all know and are comfortable with the math, and not necessarily comfortable that you like it, but more comfortable that you at least understand it. Because as you know, impact fees are really complicated because it's math, and more complicated because it's math going forward, and you have inflation, and you have deflation, and you have all those sort of things. So the basics of what we're going to talk about are contained both in the city administrator's report and then in the staff report. And I think that I'll just start you off with the basic concept, which is on page 14 of your staff reports, and that is this graphic. And more or less what we'd be looking at is we start off, we had about $18.5 million worth of funding that could be realized through traffic impact fees over the next 20, 24 years. That was before the planned action. We anticipated that we'd have just over 8,000 trips coming in, and then so you divide one by the other, and you get our $2,300. That's based on us funding 23.8% of the total capital costs with transportation impact fees. The remaining.
That's like the no growth scenario.
That's the no growth scenario, exactly. Citywide. So that's
which isn't no growth. There's still this is the regular.
No extra growth. There's still 8,022 additional PM peak hour trips that we would be experiencing. But that's 23.8% of the capital costs, which means that we, through grant funding, through our general fund, through any other sources, would have to come up with over 75% of the total costs, which we knew. We knew that going in. We knew that a significant percentage of that would be through Thornton because we determined that we weren't going to fully fund Thornton. We were going to come up to a preliminary study so we would know more what we were talking about, and then possibly decide to go out through a bond to the citizens to find some other means. So we knew that there was that existing gap. So now we add about 4,500 new trips in. Those are the new trips that we would be anticipating would be generated only by the moderate growth scenario on top of the no action scenario. Does that make sense? That's just in that area, just the moderate growth on top of the no action still being some action. But
I was actually wondering, this is maybe for Larry, the 4,478, about 4,500 trips, are those all the trips or just all the trips we can charge for? Because there's trips that, you know, go through the city and don't start here or don't end here. Or...
Well, correct. The that additional trips is the incremental growth generated within the cities within the planned action area. There was already trips within the planned action area under the no action scenario. The previous transportation element, the 2,300, there's about 800 some trips generated there. So that we'd expect about 5,400 or so trips over the life of this plan within the planned action area itself and another 7,400 or 7,500 outside the planned action. But, yes, there are other trips, through trips, existing trips. These are just growth trips,
okay, good.
Which is all you can charge impact fees.
Right.
All right. So if we added those trips, but miraculously they didn't create the need for new projects, if none of them had an impact, we divide 18.5 million by the new 12,500, and we come with $1,661 p.m. peak period trip. I'm sorry, impact fee, which sounds great. But we have to add in the additional impacts.
As you already said, math is the tough part of this. If you take the 18 million divided by the 12,500, you won't get the 1661. That 18 million under this scenario would actually be about 20 some odd million, because there's more trips that stay within the city of Ferndale with the planned action. So there's a higher percentage of the share of costs in there. So to complicate it a little bit, let's add a couple. I think it's 20.5 million or something like that. Divide by that, and you will get the 1661. I just didn't want somebody to do the math and say, well, I didn't get that number. So
run that again.
As you put in more growth,
you're saying this does not, this math formula does not come out.
But it's essentially the same, but when you run them, put in more growth in the planned action, more of the trips stay within Ferndale. The trips that used to go over to Bellis Fair or something like that might stay in here. So there's a higher percentage of city trips impacting those same locations.
A good way of thinking about it is we've talked a lot about how we have 82% loss, people going and shopping elsewhere. A trip is a beginning and an ending in the city, right? That's one trip. You start up on Church, you go and you shop down at Hagen's, that's one trip. A trip that starts up at Church and ends up at Bellis Fair is 0.5 of a trip. A trip that starts off at Sandy Point, or let's say Cherry Point, and goes through Ferndale but doesn't stop and goes into Bellingham is a zero trip. We still have the impact, but we can't charge it. And so the different way that they've been weighted and redistributed, if we have more development coming in, we're going to capture more of those trips. So we're going to have less of that 82% bleed. It's going to start getting reduced. And that's going to vary, obviously, depending on the nature of future development that comes in. But if you take that math and you go 20 million divided by the 12,500, you get that lower number. But those developments do come with their impacts. And we have calculated out that on the high end of our estimates, that's the high end for moderate growth, the roundabout scenario, it would add up to another $39 million in capital projects on top of what we already had for our approximately $70-plus million existing capital projects. Everybody following me on that? So how do you then distribute that additional $39 million out? And here's where it starts to get complicated. There are a number of ways that we can do that. And what staff is recommending, and the question was raised at committee, what does staff recommend? We're not quite there to the final recommendation because we need to kind of go step by step. Right now we have one citywide district. Everybody pays $2,300. In this circumstance, we have the potential for development to come in that would benefit more by the traffic improvements than development citywide. And recognizing that, while the rest of the city is going to benefit by having this development, it's not going to desperately need it the way that this area is. So there's a potential, and staff is recommending, and so is the transport group, going this way of having a two-district scenario. That way, we could say within the planned action area, we could charge them more heavily or a higher weight for them for those improvements that they cause.
You're calling that a district?
A district, okay. Yes. So there'd be the planned action district, and then there'd be the remainder citywide district. In that scenario, and there's infinite different scenarios that we could look at, we could charge them disproportionately higher, and maybe that word has some value statement attached to it. We could charge them more per trip for those planned action area improvements, possibly charge them less per trip for things such as Thornton. We could decide that we want to charge everybody, you know, more or less equally and keep the one-trip policy. We could also decide, as we show in scenario 1, that we could charge the portions of the trips in the planned action area only $927 for the existing improvements that we have, but then charge them $2,616 for the $39 million within the planned action area, resulting in about $3,500 for the impact fee. In doing that, we would then be charging the rest of the city about $2,200 to cover what they're already covering with the $2,300, plus approximately $1,100 for the planned action area. That way you have more or less of an equal impact fee citywide, but the argument could be that those folks up there on the hill are paying for improvements down here that they aren't necessarily creating. In scenario two, incidentally, in scenario one for the rest of the city, the $3,300 is, I believe, at or close to the maximum that we could charge outside of the planned action area. Is that an accurate statement to say? So you're looking at basically a max of $3,300 outside of the planned action area. You go then to scenario two, and again, these are just two of infinite scenarios. In scenario two, we would charge everybody within the planned action area and outside of the planned action area the same for the existing $70 million. That's at $1,661. We would then charge within the planned action area $2,616 for a grand total of $4,277 within the planned action area. Again, that is likely at or close to the maximum that we could charge within the planned action area. Outside of the planned action area.
The maximum area, we're allowed to, or the maximum you think the market would bear the development?
Since we cannot charge the full 100% cost of impact, we have to charge a proportionate share. And since we have a lot of that bleed out, we have determined it's about 40%.
The short answer is that's the assuming only the portion of Thornton that you've currently put into the plan, which is less than half the cost of Thornton. That would be the probably around the maximum under this methodology of what you could actually show as proportional share to that growth. So that would be the legal maximum in here, not a market maximum.
So, Larry, the second scenario is putting more burden on the planned action area for the Thornton, in a sense.
Correct.
Which I don't have a problem with, because it seems like the more that happens on Main Street, we're going to be forcing traffic that way.
The second scenario, if you look at it this way, you say, hey, under the previous transportation element, we said everybody should be paying for it. You get a benefit. People on Main Street get a benefit from Thornton in here. And now it's basically a supplement on top of it for the planned action, which gets the $2,600 and $1,100 that goes on top of that. So everybody gets a reduction from the 2,300 to 1,600 because there's 5,000 more trips. You just do the math there and you reduce that. So the philosophy is the same as for the original improvements, everybody pays equal. For the add-on improvements and the planned action folks get to pay a higher share because they benefit more directly from them.
Larry, just to qualify things, illustrate my thinking. When you say when we refer to the Thornton project, is that getting it over the tracks or is it just redoing what we have?
The original impact fee program that was brought to you last spring, I believe, took it all the way across.
Okay.
And then that portion of the Thornton cost was reduced to about just under 50%, which therefore would not get you across. And so that's what's in your current 2,300
across the freeway.
So, across the tracks.
And did I kind of hear it, that it was laid out there as, you know, maybe we chose an option, we're just saying a 50%, but we can...
You could bring
that number up.
If you wanted to make that 1661 back to 2300, you could do that by putting in about 80% of the Thornton cost, including getting over the freeway in here. So you can
just so
clear what you're that's why I wanted to say is you're not completely at the maximum. You're at the maximum based on what was allowed.
I think Paul's going to go on the same angle that we had that whole discussion, and we determined that probably our. I mean, because over the freeway was $35 million. And then we said, okay, that's probably not even feasible in anybody's lifetime, but it is feasible to go over the track. Mm-hmm. So then we had that price at 14 to maybe 20.
Yeah.
And then we looked at, okay, but that's where that reduction came from. So, okay, well, then let's put in for at least design moving towards that. Am I correct?
That's exactly correct.
Right.
Exactly the discussion we had. Because we looked at the going over the freeway aspects of Thornton and realized that there was no way the city of Ferndale would ever do that. As Gary said, in any of our lifetimes, the citizens would never vote for that. But we feel pretty confident that they would approve the flyover of the track to get down to 2nd Avenue.
Correct.
But that's the flyover of the track, limited to the flyover of the track, is not included in the 2300.
That's
just the engineering of. Does that correct?
No, actually, there's
not full.
Not full. Maybe not full. There's about $18 million of the Thornton project included in the current impact fee.
$18 million is included. $18 million. That doesn't get us over the track.
In the calculation. It gets you over the. It would
get you over the track. The high school track.
Because that's the lion's share. I mean, that's a big deal to go with the tracks. That really helps.
Are you sure about that?
There's about 47% of the cost of the Thornton project included right now. It may not get you completely there, but I think that it balanced out when you got to a number.
Let's check on that because I'm kind of wondering.
I thought we reduced it to go for just engineering.
Yeah.
We wanted to lower down to the 23.
Yeah. And the engineering costs are significant. I mean,
but they're not 18.
Engineering right away and all those.
Yeah. Let's check.
We can check.
Yeah, thank you.
Go ahead, Mel.
Remember, we're only talking about a quarter of the cost.
Yes.
We're not talking about the full cost. We're talking about the impact fee paying a quarter of the cost, and that's 75% of that cost will come from somewhere else. I believe, I think Larry's right, if you include 100% of the cost of all of this, that we've probably got about $18 million for the Thornton Road. But we're only talking about a quarter of the cost.
Hmm. Well,
the impact fee will cover a quarter.
Yeah.
It's here somewhere.
Right here.
23.8.
Of the total capital cost.
Correct.
In there, of which we determined, I think, 40-some-odd million were impact fee eligible. There's certain capital projects that weren't impact fee eligible, just upgrading existing roads, which are existing deficiencies, which we couldn't charge for.
So, all of these scenarios are still based on keeping that 23.8% constant. If you chose to increase it up to 40%, obviously your maximum would be significantly higher.
All the projects, that comes up, 40% is the max we could probably do. When you average in all the projects. I mean, what is the maximum we could say? We're just going to really try to get it all that way.
It's going to vary depending on the project, because some projects, because of the way that the trips are weighted. Yeah.
But there's an average. The average now is 23 point whatever. That's the average weighted thing.
Exactly.
Are you saying it could be up to about 40?
Yeah. And in reality, I would guess that the maximum that we could charge would be on what the council has indicated they would be willing to allow development to bear. Because when we were talking about closer to that max charge of being about $3,600 without the planned action area, and then if you add another $39 million on top of that, then you're probably looking well in the $5,000 or $6,000 cost range per trip. We'll certainly bring that information back to you if you'd need it, but it might be something that you would not want to be going up to that point regardless.
About in projects inside the planned action of $39 million. But that doesn't seem to pencil out to me. We were told a couple of years ago that increasing the overcrossing at 262 to four lanes with left turn lanes is going to be close to $30 million.
Based on the planning level cost estimates that we've done and have reviewed with DOT, I think we had about $25 million for the Main Street interchange, and then another $5 or $10 million down at Slater.
So you weren't in building; you were attaching lanes.
The initial $6 million that was in the original transportation element was just attaching lanes on. And then as we've gone in and put in the roundabouts and things like that, the intersection costs have gone up. And maybe the overcrossing costs would go up, and that's some more discussion. But we did review those with DOT, and they said, well, for planning purposes, what you're doing right now, that's probably a reasonable estimate. When we get into into design, we'll have a better estimate. So
they shifted probably from, because Pioneer Plaza is, 4 years old now? 5 years old.
Or 7 years old.
5 years old now. So DOT has shifted to say adding roundabouts at either end and then attaching lanes to the existing structure might be a better long-term solution than Pioneer Plaza wasn't. That was adding, totally tearing apart, rebuilding the whole interchange. Am I correct?
Mm-hmm. Pioneer Plaza also put all 1.2 million square feet on the southeast quadrant. And so a trip isn't a trip isn't a trip. If you had them all on the west side, it would be a much different scenario where the impacts might be higher, might be lower, but they're different. Also, Pioneer Plaza didn't look at Thornton as being something that could take stuff off. It didn't look at roundabouts, really. I think that it basically said a mitigation is putting in an X lane overpass, whereas I think that some of the projects that we've identified could breathe more life into the overpass without as substantial changes to it.
I think with the new planned action work, the planned action EIS, it I think devoted a lot more time and energy to the estimations of the traffic improvements than the Pioneer Plaza EIS did. So it's not only is it newer by 4 or 5 years, but I think it benefits from the entire planned action corridor study. And that's why we have a range. And just for food for thought for the future, we've also just recently, you may know about this, we've put in for a small grant from the Port of Bellingham. They give out grants each year to the small cities for economic development purposes. And in fact, that's why Yuri and Transport was a little late today. They were meeting with DOT because we hope to use this grant to study the interchange itself and to come up with what might be considered the preferred design scenario, what shape the roundabouts might be, in concert with DOT for two purposes. One is to try to nail down the target we're shooting for, so DOT can kind of get on board and we can eventually get the that interchange justification report done. But perhaps more importantly in the short run, if we can come up with a preferred design concept, we then can cost out that design and hopefully narrow down that, that range of 30 to 39 million we have, because the biggest component of the planned action improvements are the freeway interchange, or is the freeway interchange. So we will be able to come back here in the near future with some tighter numbers as we start planning for this.
You're asking us to make a decision in the next few months, then by the end of this month, mm-hmm. what the traffic impact is going to be. And we don't know anything about this.
Well, I think we have a as reasonable as you could get.
You're just saying that we're going to try and get together with WSDOT and narrow down the range, get the design mm-hmm. standards mm-hmm. figured out, and do all this, and it's going to shift the costs around. And it might decrease some, it might increase others. I don't. This is why I don't see the rush on stuff like this. Now, I know that we've got developers sitting out there in the wings that want to know what's it going to cost me. But it's going to change.
Well, no matter what we do, it's going to change.
You know, it's like, okay, Mr. Developer, this is what you're going to pay for traffic mitigation.
Right.
Oops, wait a minute, we made a mistake. We came back and WSDOT says it's going to cost this much, not this much, so now we're going to charge you this much.
Well, that's why we're using the upper end of the range, the $39 million, not the $30 million. So that way we're erring at the top end. Right now, based on these two scenarios that are in the staff reports, we've heard that of the $70 million, we're going to be collecting nearly $20 million. We've already heard that. Under these two scenarios, of the $39 million, we're scheduled to collect about $22 million, about 57%. Of the $39 million. So even at the top end, or what might be considered the most that we could charge within the planned area and outside the planned area for the planned action improvements for the $39 million, we're still talking about collecting approximately 60%. Now, that may go to 55 or 62 when we get better numbers, but we're not talking about charging the full amount or coming up with a scenario where we're going to be grossly less than what we know we're not going to collect 100%. Right now we're thinking we're going to collect 50, 55%, 57%. So those numbers will get better as we move on. But we're talking 20 years. And, you know, as time goes on, no matter how careful we are right now, no one's going to be able to figure out not only when development comes in, but when the improvements are going to be needed and how much they're going to cost. Because go back 20 years ago and you know, construction costs were vastly different than they are today, and you just can't project with a high degree of certainty 20 years in the future. You have to do the best you can, and I think the work that Transpo and at our next meeting, Burke has done, gives us the best numbers that we could possibly get at this point.
And I think also...
Well, Yori and Transpo, then I'll go back to Doug.
I think also we need to remember that while the planned action... will hopefully lend some consistency and expectations to the process. If development was going to come in the next 20 years, it was still going to come regardless of what we did. And, in fact, you could argue, and you've heard people argue, that we're actually pushing it out further by increasing fees. But if development came and started coming when we charged fees of $1,000 a trip, or I think it was about $750 a trip in this area, the cost of the projects and the impact that they would have would still be the same. So we'd still be looking at up to $39 million, or we would be having to deal with $39 million. We might just not be looking at it until we start seeing failures and realizing that we're only charging $750 a trip to fund a $39 million project. Then we would be...
But with C, we have to look at it soon if we maintain C.
If we maintain C, then we would have to look at it earlier, but would we have planned for it? We might all of a sudden find ourselves saying, we need to stop development because we're now at D and we've raised zero funding for it of the $39 million. That 39 is going to still stay constant. It's already 39. It's just whether we realize it is or not.
Okay, Larry, and then I'll go to John and then Boyd.
This is a clarification on impact fees. They're very seldom static over time. One, you can put it just in the cost escalator to deal with general construction costs, but things change. As you get more refined cost estimates and more project definition, if they're significantly different than what the assumptions were to begin with, you update your and you readopt that impact fee calculator with a new cost estimate. Every agency that has impact fees looks at it that way. And sometimes the land use plan changes again, just as you've gone through here. If you've put in the plan to action, you've got more development, you're re-looking at the impact fees, which projects should be in, which projects aren't in. So it's going to be a dynamic process over time when you make a decision on Thornton. Are we going to, how far are we going to take it? What's it going to look like? What's the real cost? And you can update the impact fees on those. So those kind of things are going to happen. What all I can say is if you, what you don't charge for now, so you will never go back to the same developer and say, hey, we were going to charge you $2,300. It's $2,300 when you came in, you paid you $2,300. And, oh, well, now we should have got you $4,000 for it. You can't do that. You've already, they've already mitigated. But you're going to put, if you update the cost estimate in the future, the next and you change that, the next development in might pay more in that process because you have more project definition instead of a $20 million project, it's 25. So they're going to pay a higher share. So you're using the best information you have at the planning level we have now, and as more projects get closer to implementation, you'll have better cost estimates, and you'll have more information on the phasing and all those types of things of where you'll spend those money, fees as well. So,
John and then Lloyd.
Yeah, I have the same concern as Paul. I think what you're saying, Larry, is the magnitude of error estimating gets smaller and smaller as we further down the path, and we want it as close as we can, but it never gets to zero. I mean, nothing, you know. But my real question is kind of a bottom line question. If I were to take a position as a council member that I like Ferndale the way it is, if development comes in, I want them to pay for it as much as we can legally make them pay for. If I took kind of that as my threshold, is that what this $4,300 is, or could that even be higher? I'm not talking about what we think they would pay. What they should be, but if I'm looking for a threshold, is I really want them,
okay,
developers, to pay as much as we can make them pay. What would be that number?
Well,
legally
with what's in there right now, the in the planned action scenario 2, the 4277, mm-hmm, assuming, and this is all caveated on Thornton, whatever share of Thornton we've put in there, these are the.
What do you mean? We don't.
We didn't put 100% of Thornton to get over to the freeway. Over the freeway.
Did we put as much as we think we could?
No, I think you could.
Well, we brought the 36 down to 23 by adjusting Thornton.
So, am I getting the answer? What's the biggest we can make that number?
The 4277. Assuming that you're comfortable keeping the 2300 citywide, which in this scenario equates to 1661. Both in and outside the district. That's scenario 2. So you can see that it's 1,661 for inside and out for the 70 million, which is whatever the amount of Thornton was in there that got us to 2,300. That now goes to 16 because of the additional trips. And then the 2,616,
mm-hmm,
added to that to get the 4,277. That scenario 2 PA area trips is the maximum that we believe could legally be defendable
and then is it,
and chargeable to those.
Is it something that Larry helps us with or Burke helps us with when we say, okay, what do we think is the max they will pay? That's the other question. The threshold that a developer is going to
pay. No one is probably going to be able to tell you that number.
Each developer will tell you a different number and it'll be
right.
Lower than this.
It could be a dollar and someone will say it's a dollar too high.
But that's a big number.
And other people will say that 4277 isn't enough. You know, others. Just constituents. I mean, there'll always be those that
it's
say.
It's up for you as the council, though, to
right.
Do some research and see if you can get some educated opinions. Let's maybe talk about how you can do that.
Right.
Of course, Zimmerman and then Olson.
I'm keeping a little running tally on my head about this whole project: the Transpo money, the Burke money, the water, you know,
stormwater,
that money. How much are you anticipating asking the county economic development?
County.
EDI.
Oh, EDI.
Yeah. That's county, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That is county. Probably as much as we can, going against one of those waffly answers. The key right now with EDI is that EDI is in kind of a limbo state right now. The county's not accepting any more EDI applications.
Not after the Linden one?
No, in fact, maybe not. And that one's still to be... And the deal is, and many of you have heard this before, is that with the new county exec and a now a reconstituted or somewhat reconstituted Whatcom County Council, there seems to be some appetite on the county end to relook at EDI funds and relook at the type of projects they take in and the formula they use and the decision tree that they come up to just decide if the way they've given EDI funds out in the past is the philosophical framework that they want to give out EDI funds in the future.
But Lloyd brings up a good point that's kind of important that he understands, and I think the whole council kind of needs to hear and understand, is that that's probably not the EDI isn't the solution to our traffic, nor is DOT, because you know, they've come and said, you know, we don't have any money. So the solution lies in Ferndale, and that's the tough decision. Remember we talked about that one will make your chair up there hot and warm.
And that goes to the...
Because the solution lies up there.
And that goes to the fact that if we need $39 million, and let's say that we're able to collect, and under Scenario 2, we'll collect for the planned action area about of the $39 million, $22 million. We still have to come up with a balance. And the question is, how much should we take out of sales tax? How much can we take out of property tax, REIT? But yet, how much do we still need to continue to operate, to add to our parks department, to add to our police force? So it's one of those games where, and again, this is where Burke will hopefully help us next time, to say, okay, now that you have philosophically gone in one direction, we want two zones, we're comfortable maybe in scenario one, maybe scenario two, or maybe something in there. And this is individually. You kind of get your heads comfortable with where you think you're going to go. Then the question becomes where you fall down on as far as exactly what the transportation impact fees are, you then mathematically have a gap to fill. And that's when you're going to have to say, okay, I'm comfortable with this level of transportation impact fee because I'm comfortable putting in this much property tax, this much sales tax, this much REIT money to get to 39 at the end of the day.
And we knew that going in. And if you'll recall, the Burke study said that when it came in, this should be able to be funded in terms of everything that brings into the table with the sales tax, whether or not we had TBD or not, it wouldn't make the gap more.
I was really looking just for a number.
Of how much we could ask EDI for?
Yeah, what's in your head, what you're thinking about asking?
If they approve the Linden one.
$39 million.
Yeah. No, I mean, this is just for a study.
Right.
This is just for a study, right?
Way more.
Because I envision asking for EDI money for when we actually go and do a project. Let's say we're actually building the roundabout in front of Walgreens. In front of Hagen's. That because I'm thinking the direction that EDI is going to go is, and this is just my own thoughts, less planning and more doing. They're going to want to fund projects, not studies. Mm-hmm. So if we continue to do our good work, and hopefully we continue with Transpo and DOE to come up with our preferred alternative when it comes to the interchange, and we establish our impact fees, when we go to build, say, the Walgreens roundabout.
Maybe I wasn't resting.
The Hagen's roundabout.
Hagen's roundabout. We'll have a good number, and we can go to EDI and say, we need this amount, or we need this amount.
Well, maybe I wasn't listening carefully, so I thought you were going to ask him for study money for that overpass and whatnot.
Right now, since EDI is kind of getting limbo and they've closed any new applications, and since the port had their economic development grants out there, that small grant out there, and we've talked to Transpo, and we think that we can come up with, in concert with DOT, probably two or three potential roundabout alternatives and then settle in on one preferred alternative. Because that is now in front of us as a distinct possibility, I had not envisioned going to EDI for any more study money.
Okay.
About six, 7 more minutes, Councilperson Olson.
I remember going through this impact piece the first time around, and we couldn't do anything until we had the magical Transpo study. Now we've had the study, so maybe you can help me understand, because this happened after I left the first time. If he gives us a figure, based on all of his study, why are we ignoring it?
Why are we having a wholesale 33% off is 36%?
Well, because the understand, and I completely understand why the council went that way. I'll explain it, and then if another council person wants to jump in, because I don't want to speak for you. But the math showed a higher fee than the 23. And then the council looked, it'd be like park mitigation. Because it really is that's a juggling thing. It's a big decision. Let's go what your big decision is. We could charge the fee to this, and we'd have a perfect traffic impact fee, and all the problems could be solved if every developer agreed with that fee and built. We also could say, that fee is too high, I'm not going to come. So now we're back to Greg's scenario, okay, now we're back down. I mean, it is, if there were developers in the room, they'd have that question of, okay, well, what is the max? We don't know that. What is the maximum the developer will pay and still come? Or he says, no, I can't afford to build it for another year, too expensive. But then you don't get my traffic. We still have traffic problems.
Yeah, and what we've heard too, and Burke might help us out on this, is that when it comes to building a large development in Ferndale or anywhere else, there's the land price component, there's the price of building your actual building, and then there's all the impact fees. And, you know, a building is a building is a building. If you want to build a Fred Meyer's, it costs so much per square foot no matter where you build it, you know, within some range, whether it's Tukwila or whether it's Ferndale. The building's going to cost so much. What gives is land prices, and we've heard this from Burke, and we'll hear it again. As the price of impact fees go up, and potentially the building material prices go up, so the cost of building the building goes up, what has to give in order for the national retailer or someone to still make it make sense to their bank is that the land price goes down. So we will probably hear that as we push up the transportation impact fee, that will have the effect of driving down the prices that people who want to come to Ferndale and buy land to develop are willing to pay. Now, if you already own the land, if you already own a bunch of acreage in the city, of course, that's out of that's not part of the equation. Now you're just dealing with your impact fees
and
your building.
Right. Still want to hit it properly.
But if you already own the land, let's say you've owned it for a long time, I mean, you're not buying the land, so you can't push the land price down because you already own the land. It really comes down to the idea of how much you're going to collect, and if you're comfortable with that, fine. If you're not, then you probably need to adjust it. But there is no one that's going to stand up and say it can't be a dime over this amount. They, no matter what we say, they're going to say it's too high, but others will say we're not charging enough because they're supposed to
pay. So about two minutes, I got two hands up. I'm going to councilperson Olson still has the floor, and then I'll try to quickly go to
that's
YouTube.
That's what got
us
into this problem in the first time. I'm not pointing fingers at anybody because I was part of the problem the first time. I don't know if that came out. But we couldn't justify it, so we were hamstrung until then, that being important. But maybe we should have the discussion how much profit is too much. Because you're always going to have those arguments, and you got to take a stand somewhere.
Right.
And this is the reason why I think we're in this mess without enough money for fixing these things. Is because we're charging too little. Now we have a study that justified it, and we don't want to pay attention to it.
One thing that's certain is if we charge too little, we will get growth but won't have the money to pay for it.
Exactly.
If we charge too much, we won't get the growth but we won't have the impacts. If we find a number that's not too high and not too low, somewhere in between there, we will have a modest amount of growth and a modest amount of the revenues.
But we whack 33-34% off of what he's saying we should be charging. That's a pretty good chunk.
It was, yes. It was.
You have a comment? An unbelievably intelligent response to all this to solve it all?
Well, one thing that I'll just share with other agencies have done. Okay, here's our maximum. We have those calculated. Because we don't know how fast where that threshold is, we'll adopt it at 85% or 80% or something of that. And, hey, we've been getting the permits in. Obviously, we haven't scared them away. Next year, let's raise it to 90% type of thing. So you don't have to go back through the math. You don't have to go through all the calculations. You just change the policy level of, hey, our maximum fee could be 42, whatever. We're going to charge 80% of that until such time later on you decide to charge 90% 470.
That sounds like a good idea. It sounds like
so that's just another
option.
That's another option of bringing it out. One agency that did that, I can tell you, the city of Des Moines, they basically said, we're going to put in the impact fees. They hadn't done them before. We want everybody to come now. We want to get that development coming in. So they didn't charge for the first year. Then they charged 50%, then 60%. They had basically put it in. They didn't get the rush to the counter. It was because the type of development that wanted to be there wasn't either ready to go in those locations or whatever type of thing until they got some other things done, such as cleaning up Highway 99.
I'll give one more, then I'm going to cut you off because we got to give Mr. Gore time to set up before the 6 o'clock. So, John, you're it.
Well, yeah, we're looking for the Goldilocks solution. I think with Keith's question, I think quickly on the council's decision on the 2300, we wanted to go 38, but we were like at 15 or 16, and I think the jump was terrifying to us. We had a lot of developers tell us, "Ikes, you know." So it's the art of politics. What do you think you can get away with?
But that's because it was so low.
I know.
To begin with.
Yeah, we never raised
it. So it wasn't a good comparison. And we'll move the discussion. I think we have moved, or you're starting to show some head nodding that we create separate zones that are different. I saw some head nodding there, so we'll kind of have staff kind of go in that direction. So we'll stop the work session for now, and then we'll start again at 6 o'clock and allow Mr. Gore time to get it all set up. Hey, Tom. I want to give you a play this time. No, you know.
Gary, we got a solution.
What is it?
And you're part of it.
What is it?
Well, we just kind of keep it the high end, but we send you out to kind of wheel and deal with it.
Yeah, I follow.
That's the way it is, you know. Then we do the old eagle thing. Well, you know, if you put in this, well, you know.
But like John and I had a discussion. We've heard some thresholds, but the threshold is different in accent, totally different. Then you get off that, and then we still haven't even thrown in Slater. When Bert comes, will he kind of throw that out?
Okay.
Two zones. Well, you know, it's Bazooka will say it, but then, like, but Ferndale Station will tell you completely different.
Hello.
How are you?
Just come for 10 minutes? Because we're going to do the big pump. We'll just get there 10 minutes before. after this one, she'll go, I'll never do this again. Well, we did like all three going.
Good, huh?
Looked sharp as ever. This weekend.
Where are your boots?
We did 12 of them.
Where are your boots? Just stand on the side.
Well, I'm selling my little Frankenstein. Yeah. For 10 years, that's been a good.
But here we're just doing a monster train.
I got stop. Yes. Yeah. Well, I'm really putting. No, I've got a couple of different projects doing, but one, the big community aquatic center. I'll be talking more about that. It's a big economic generator and all the fun stories. So just, I really need to focus on that before I die. Yeah.
Are you going to help Tom? Okay, you're just his moral support. He's the man. Well, make sure you recognize her. No.
There's
a little crooked there. The matchbook is crooked.
I mean, I know we have a lot of
trips, but you don't have to say
the projector's kind of off kilter. Larry, I have...
I'm not
ceiling.
This one is in hospitals. This is one summer.
You better start training. You better start training.
Yeah, I have to deal with that.
I mentioned that, and they said we were just talking about that.
Let's see, you're going to be sitting down for a while. We got a couple things.
Hey, what do you think about this?
You see if I, I'm going to go see if I have
a good solution.
Okay.
When you have money, you think about it.
Very good.
Doug Robertson emailed me when I was down with them, and he was wondering what was going on in the meeting. He's been totally disengaged for the last week or so.
I guess I should go.
Now that we have
planned action ordinance, WSDOT said that one of the things that they'd be more interested in for the trigger is rather than based on inbound and outbound trips was level of service on their offering, because their main focus is not having people back up onto the freeway.
Well, that's great. Okay, we could have dual triggers then, inbound, outbound, for the corridor improvements and off-ramp level service for DOT improvements.
Yeah, that's what.
Because we've broken down the city improvements and state improvements.
And there's a, and it makes sense. This, what they're saying is, all right, you have 2,600 inbound trips down the east side, that's the north bound. Down the west side, that's our stuff. The bad big difference, so it's not the best. And they also talked about maybe identifying something where if something generates more than 400 these peak hour trips or whatever, they get to review it to that's they said that way we can have our staff reviewing it. It's not going to cost the city. We said, maybe, but we don't want to get into something review. We want to review everything. They've become the leaders in educating others outside of Seattle on what a good job
team is.
So we're learning it the day before, and then we're ridiculing them when they ask the same questions 24 hours later. Here's this guy. And I can.
You can say how much you generate. The thing is, like, right in the middle of my time schedule.
You got 20 seconds. So Brian needs to do his first baby daddy training at 7.
Hey, John, you're going to be the pledge.
Well, what's he here
for? Do you remember? Landscape.
I just have to start it.
Don't look at me.
Muscular will lead us in the pledge to our nation. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. You may be seated. Wow.
Our clerk will now take the roll call.
Councilmember Watson?
Here.
Councilmember Hanson?
Here.
Councilmember Olson?
Here.
Councilmember Ingram?
Here.
Councilmember Musler?
Here.
Councilmember Zimmerman?
Here.
Councilman Goodrich has requested a excuse absence. I accept the motion.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, moved by Councilperson Mutchler, seconded more quickly by Councilperson Zimmerman. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries 6-0. Great. Okay, next up is the public comment period. This is the point where the public can come forward and address the council on anything that's not on tonight's agenda. If it's on tonight's agenda, we'll give you a chance to talk. This would be on something that's not on tonight's agenda. I haven't, no one signed up. That doesn't matter. We still open to the public. Anything you'd like to speak to the council. High school students are allowed to do that, too. You get extra credit for that.
Extra credit.
Why? They never believe me. Okay. I don't see anybody jumping forward. We're through with the public comment period. You lost your chance. You can come back next time. Well, then, great. We have one. Thank you. Come forward, sir. Come to the podium and name address if you'd like.
My name is Fred Rudolph. And I'd like to know if the council has an ordinance taking care of these old dilapidated buildings so the kids don't get in and play and get hurt. Does the council have an ordinance such as that? And I refer to two buildings on Portal Way, one that's about ready to collapse, and kids can get in there and get hurt. And not only that, they're an eyesore.
Okay. I'm going to refer that to our community development director who would be in charge of enforcement. Do you want to address that?
Yes, we actually have two ordinances, and we do definitely rely on members of the public to point out building structures that may be impacted. One of them is a nuisance ordinance that applies to something that appears to be dilapidated and is more or less an eyesore, as you put it. The other one, the one that is much more important in many ways, is if there is a life safety issue. If folks can go into a building and risk themselves, then that would be certainly something that we could look into. So I will talk to you after the public comment period and possibly get
your like to see it enforced.
And maybe if you can get, he could step aside, you can get his phone number.
Absolutely.
And you can converse with this gentleman so he knows what you've done. So
absolutely.
We'll get your number soon enough to
okay,
spit out in public. And
one other comment.
You bet. You can have.
I'd like to know exactly what kind of road maintenance you're going to do with the what's on the ballot.
Oh, okay. The ballot measure, I'll go to our public works director for that one.
Actually, we have a list of the projects on the city's website, and I have it right here.
Each year, so what the council did this year, they voted a list of projects they go to. And then each year, the Transportation Benefit District Board, by law, if it passed, will have to meet yearly and go, okay, here's your priority list of projects we'll do on that money. Now, we predict at our present tax rate it'll be $300,000 a year. So that won't be enough to fix every road, but we hope it will be a start to fix those. And then so the list this year.
And these were, we sent out some flyers on Friday, isn't that correct?
No, they're coming out on the 8th.
Oh, okay, so this will be mailed to all the utility customers on the 8th. And on the back of it, we have a list of the projects that we would, this is the priority project that we would complete first.
Can we borrow yours and give it to them now?
I'm sure.
How about that? We'll just steal it from her pile.
Curious as to exactly what you want to do.
Yeah.
I know I come from other counties, and what they do to preserve their roads is they use a hot tar method and then sand it and then cut the speed limit down to 25 so the stones aren't thrown up, and that will preserve a lot of your roads, and it's fast and cheap.
So unlike chip seal, but it's...
It is chip seal.
Oh, it is.
And they roll it after
they
that.
Roll it
hot tar
yep.
method, but sand. Not gravel. He said sand.
Yeah, sand.
It's a little different than chip seal.
But that will seal all those cracks and keep the water from getting in and freezing making larger and so forth.
Okay.
I've had a lot of experience on that.
Okay. Make sure you get his number. We'll put him on the road project.
Two of them.
We don't mind grabbing any expertise we can.
You get a free orange jumpsuit.
Wow, okay.
Thank prevent you from coming to speak.
One other comment.
Okay, you can have three.
I like to comment on the water. The water is a hell of a lot better now that you're on the well.
Thank you.
It sure is. It sure is a lot better. You couldn't drink that other stuff.
I agree. Some people like the water. I think the new water is great. Thank you very much.
All right. Yeah. Well, thank you for your comment.
Thank you.
Okay. Now, if you saw how easy that was, so that, would anyone else like to come forward?
Public comment.
It's fun. You know, you can't. You know, don't be shy.
Okay. So, council, I'd approve a motion to approve the consent agenda.
So moved.
Okay, second. Moved by Councilperson Ingram in his new seat, seconded by Councilperson Hansen.
No.
Councilperson Olson. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion carries 6-0. Okay, next we have an unbelievably exciting presentation by the Center for Economic Vitality. Welcome to Mr. Tom Doerr.
Let's see if we can use technology tonight. It's great to be back in Ferndale. I spend probably 2 or 3 days a month here, and actually the last few nights we've been facilitating restructuring youth soccer in Whatcom County and try to get more people out to the soccer fields in Ferndale. So stay tuned on that. I am the director of the Center for Economic Vitality at Western Washington University, and with me is our business strategist that covers Ferndale, Deb Lee, if you want to stand up and meet the council. I'm here tonight to give you kind of our annual report of 2011 activities, and thank you for your support, and talk a little bit about economic development at the business-to-business level. As part of Western, we bring a lot of different resources from the university to Ferndale. We are one of numerous organizations that supports economic development from the College of Business and Economics, the Center for Economic and Business Research, Border Policy Research Institute, and the SBDC. We're going to see if we can make this work. There we go. I brought a map in case people want to know a little bit closer. The star is not where we are. That's Gadsden County. We are trying to recruit businesses from there to come to Ferndale, but give you a little bit more information about who we are. One of the other areas that we pride ourselves in is bringing connections. Economic development is about facilitation of relationships and resources, and Ferndale is blessed to have the opportunity to bring lots of different organizations around the community, Whatcom County, to support its members. And these are some of the areas where we have involvement on a monthly, quarterly basis and bring a lot of these relationships to the community. And I won't go through them, but if you have any quick questions about what is one of those, I'd be happy to try to explain what that is. Does everybody know what WAHA is? Whatcom Alliance for Healthcare Access? Good. That's one that we've been putting a lot of information, trying to get small businesses connected with health insurance so that everybody in Ferndale has access to health insurance. The Center for Economic Vitality focuses on four main areas. One is that one-on-one technical assistance with the support of the council as well as other local funding sources. We're able to do that at no charge for the Ferndale businesses. We also provide training through workshops and seminars, which I'll talk a little bit more about. Ferndale's been our focal point for 2011 of offering training programs throughout Whatcom County. We have a whole research department, which nationally we're recognized for, economic gardening program, which uses research to help businesses make strategic decisions. Just like the council makes strategic decisions based on input and research, businesses do that as well, and we take the resources of higher education, some subscriptions and databases to get cutting-edge information into local businesses' hands. And we do special projects on a fee-for-service basis. Examples of that, we partner with the City of Bellingham to survey all the permit center users in a confidential, non-biased way to look at feedback as a continuous quality improvement for City Hall as a way of improving their planning and permitting department. Our counselors have advanced degrees. Their focus with businesses is confidential. Some of the businesses that we talk about give us permission to talk about them. A number have been before the council over the years thanking you for and encouraging you for the support of the CEV. We bring, again, banking relationships, professional connections in the community, as well as take a team approach where it's not just Deb out here twice a month helping the businesses. She has a cadre of resources behind her that we rely on to bring to bear in Ferndale. This was a survey that we just completed of businesses to find out how did you do in 2011. All the doom and gloom that you hear has been, I think, fueled by the media and also by the reality of we have a high level of unemployment still in Whatcom County. But what our focus is getting people back to work, and part of that is making sure that businesses are performing profitably so that they can grow and they can hire workers back to work or expand. So we asked the question, how did you perform at a loss? About a third of our client base performed at a loss. 6% didn't know yet, which is always a concern. If they don't know where they are, we spend a lot more time focused on financial management systems. 20% are still struggling with break even, which for a lot of them, that's survival. So the ones that are 51% of our clients are really struggling still out in Ferndale. Well, 43% are doing better either because of increased sales or because of increased expense management. And we focus on doing both in part of our counseling efforts. So I just wanted you to know that a lot of our efforts are showing up positively. Over the years, you've heard me focus on where is job growth. If we were to predict where job growth was to occur, historically that has been with what we call stage two companies, businesses with more than 10 employees and less than 100. That represents about 8 to 9% of the businesses in Whatcom County, and they represent over 34% of the employees. But they don't get good representation in economic development. The owners are still involved in the businesses. They're really growth-oriented. They've typically been around more than 3 years, more than $1 million in sales. They're the stability and for a lot of our community. Our focus for the last few years has been trying to outreach with programs and services to those stage two companies. 24% of our businesses are those stage two companies. I just talked with Employment Security, and about 50% of the job openings in Whatcom County right now are with stage two companies. So that further emphasizes that we need to be conscious of what's going on with those 10 to 99 size businesses. They're usually under the radar. Our research services are focused on getting data, competitive intelligence into businesses' hands so that they can react strategically. That involves everything from trends in the industry to financial comparisons. How is my little brewery versus other breweries out there? We have the information for finding that out. I'm picking on you, Lloyd. Sorry. I didn't pick on plumbing services, so that'll be next. we've seen a real shift over the last year in really trying to figure out how have competitors adjusted to the changing economy. What has the recession done to wages? We were surprised to see that there has actually been a deflation in wages, and a number of companies hadn't been adjusting their compensation packages accordingly. We've also seen a huge increase in export information. I'll expand on that in a little bit. So what happens during a recession is companies get internally focused. When you're growing gangbusters, you're externally focused, more business is good, you're growing. One of the positive things that comes out of a recession is increased efficiencies and increased focal point inward. Same thing you've had to do with City Hall. The challenge is to get information in the hands of those decision makers to make sure that they have full information about that. A little bit of the impacts over the last year, 38 businesses served. 18 of those were first-time businesses in Ferndale. We spent over 500 hours directly supporting those. There's probably another half again as much of indirect service. And this is for the direct counseling efforts in Ferndale. Some of the impacts, we have saved or created over 159 jobs last year in Ferndale and brought in $1.5 million. So the $5,000 that you invested in the CEV last year brought back $1.5 million in new investment. That's defined as new loans, investment by the owners or outside private investment. So we calculate that to be 166-to-1 return on investment. And for that, thank you very much. That's a huge number, and we hope that that exudes confidence to continue to fund the CEV and support the partnership that we have with you and the Ferndale businesses. So there is good news happening in a down economy, and there's a lot of good news. And again, our focal point is that less than 100 size businesses, so none of this is in telco or any of the large employers that you have out in Cherry Point. I will say some of the main areas of expansion have been in the manufacturing and industrial area, which is typically higher living wage jobs. It hasn't been as much in the retail area. Despite our efforts to try to recruit more retail, I think the foundation's laid for that to occur as we come out of the recession. And I think Ferndale's well positioned to take advantage of that. But the positive aspect is it's those stage two companies that are typically manufacturing or industrial based. One of the areas that we are heavily focused on is helping companies get out of the recession through increased sales. And increased sales is difficult to do when consumer purchasing is down and people are not confident that they are going to have jobs. So we focused on attracting some new revenue source from the Department of Commerce and specifically the CURB board at the state level to be part of a program called Jumpstart Washington Exports. And this is a program where we help Ferndale businesses expand sales through international trade. I'll explain a little bit about that. There's a couple of focus points there. Every dollar that's spent in Ferndale that by Canadians is considered a export because they're buying goods or services, taking them back across the border. So when somebody comes down and buys gas or buys from the local restaurant, those are actually foreign trade transactions. So from a services standpoint, we're really trying to push thanking Canadians for being here. That's my mantra for 2012. We want to thank Canadians for coming down. Without them, Whatcom County's economy would be very, very difficult. And so anytime I hear people complaining about the guide and traffic, I want to say thank those Canadians because they keep people employed here. Yes, Lloyd.
Tom, did you get involved with the cross-border stuff, the Nexus passes and all that stuff?
Not from a policy standpoint. That's where the Border Policy Research Institute and Canadian Studies within Western get heavily involved in that. We try to advocate for the business transactions, mm-hmm. but we're really trying to stay on the business development side instead of the policy development side. Okay. We'll leave that up to you. Again, the products and in retail, you've got a major manufacturer here that's going to be adding over 200 jobs over the next 3 years, and to a T, almost all of those are going to be dependent upon increased export sales. They're going to be doubling their space, major construction going on, and they have made the commitment that their growth is all going to occur because of exports, and we're helping them do that. So where does Ferndale export to? This is just a small sampling of some of our clients in Ferndale that sell internationally. We have one client that in less than 5 years is doing over $5 million in export sales, and they project to be in the next 5 years over $35 million in sales through export, all internet-based. under the radar. Part of our Jumpstart Washington Exports program is to connect companies with British Columbia importers. Our proximity to the border should give us a differential advantage. We're not leveraging that as much. So we're trying to bring groups of businesses together to participate in trade shows. This is one that Deb Lee took 10 food and service providers up to a hospitality show in Vancouver in November and made connections to help increase some of those sales. A couple of those are Ferndale businesses. We're also doing matchmaking. One of the key impediments to exporting is who do I talk to? How do I connect with people? Because of our relationships with the Surrey or the boards of trade, like the Surrey Board of Trade and the Chambers of Commerce up there, we've created relationships where if we have a Washington State exporter that wants to connect with British Columbia, we're finding a people to talk to, not just a list of people, but warm bodies to make that handshake. We're also developing a virtual website that anybody that's exporting needs to be on, where a list of companies that want to create international connections is going to be able to virtually connect worldwide with importers. We're partnering with the Department of Commerce on that. Shift. Part of our focus for 2011 was also to bring technical assistance through trainings and workshops to businesses in Whatcom County. And we partnered with the Ferndale Chamber of Commerce to have all of those held here in Ferndale. We felt it was a central point. We have amazing hospitality. Weeku offered us the space at no cost. So we did a number of different programs. These are just a sampling of some of what the topic areas are. And the chamber has been fantastic at helping get the word out to business owners and business managers about some of these key areas. So, again, when a recession occurs, then that internal focus happens. Awareness of deficiencies in operations and in how a business runs, these are some of the areas where they can get a quick snapshot in an hour over lunch on some of those issues that can be followed up with that one-on-one technical assistance. We also are partnering with Woods Coffee. Once a month, we are here from 7:30 to 10:30. I think one of the council members participated in that, a conversation with that, but that's confidential, so I won't talk about it. learning a little bit more. So Deb's out here. Again, open office hours, think of it that way. Drop in, talk to a counselor, try to take our services to where the businesses are. So we're constantly trying to promote economic development and the services of the CEV to both through chamber activities, the media here. Deb's been quoted in the Ferndale Record. We've been on the radio, again, trying to increase awareness of some of the services for the local businesses that they can tap into at no charge. And I would encourage the council, if you have businesses that you interact with that are struggling or are expanding, please give them our name. The thing that I hear more than anything else is, I wish I'd have heard about you earlier. Or I heard about you, but I didn't know you did this. So we need your help at getting that word out, because any business that's struggling is an opportunity for us to come in and help turn that around. So we need you to be part of that referral network as well. A lot of client satisfaction and successes. We do a quarterly survey. Just to make sure that our quality control and our quality improvement is there. Again, we're blessed with having a staff that is really focused on customer service and client needs, and we're continuously trying to improve on that through educating ourselves as well as focused on that can-do attitude. So some of the things that we've got in store for 2012, continuing the one-on-one business counseling, the research services, workshops will continue in partnership with the chamber. Rather than us doing all of the talking, we're going to try to bring in some local Ferndale professionals to help stimulate some of their business and make connections. A lot of times people don't talk to their CPA or their lawyer because they're afraid it's going to cost them money or other other particular reasons. So we're going to try to facilitate that. The export assistance is going to be a primary focus for the CEV this year with Ferndale businesses. So any business that's exporting, we want to know about it. We want to get in there and give them tools and assistance to help expand that. Continue some of the access to trade shows, matchmaking, and facilitating of relationships. So this is some of the pictures of our team and some of the outcomes that we've created. Since I took over in 1996, we've seen over 5,000 businesses in Whatcom County, generated over $200 million in new investment, and over 6,000 clients served and over 5,000 jobs created or saved. So, and with that, I'll entertain questions. And
questions for Tom? You're going to get off easy. We'll take about
How do you help people who don't know if they can export something? If you build something but you're not sure you can sell it someplace else?
Two ways. First of all, we do research as to what the impediments might be to that and what are the harmonized codes to get it across a border. Second, we do competitive analysis. So if a competitor is selling across a border, we find that out. And third, we help them educate them as to the awareness of what it takes to export. And for some people, the challenge isn't the ability, it's the confidence. And that's where we help them overcome any skills deficiency or knowledge deficiency with helping them get ready for that. We help with paperwork as well. We also have a lot of good relationships with the brokers that solve all that problem. Good question. Thanks.
Any more questions for Tom? Councilperson Mutchler?
Yeah, thanks for coming back this year, Tom. I saw in your brochure, so it's not confidential, Steve Brodkowski,
yes,
and Fairhaven Runners. So I actually called him up and went down and spent about an hour and a half with him, and he just sang your praises from start to finish. And for those that don't know, he owns a successful running shoe company down there in Fairhaven. I was just kind of curious, funding for the center is a lot of it by municipalities like Ferndale help you. I'm just curious if some of the businesses that have been helped by you make donations and help you out. It seems like they'd be a great place for assistance. Do they? And do you actually sort of go after them a little bit, like I would, you know, and say, hey.
Excellent question.
How about helping us out a little bit?
Yeah, we've been struggling for the last 2 years with funding because we have been we get our funding from a couple different places. One-third of our funding comes from federal grants that we write, primarily from the Economic Development Administration. We've had some with the USDA and the SBA over the years.
Okay.
Second, third comes from the state. The export assistance grant through CURB is 100% state funding, where we're bringing more resources into Whatcom County. Third is through local funding, the port, the county, the city of Bellingham, Sumas, Blaine, Linden, and Ferndale. We also get a little bit of money as donations from clients. We have not been as good at that. We're going to get better at that, especially this year, because we're losing a large percentage of our local funding. And we're going to have to figure out how to do things differently than we have in the past.
You need a marketing plan.
We need a marketing plan.
Do you mind answering roughly your annual budget?
It fluctuates. We've had as many as 19 employees where we've been just under $1 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have 10 employees, and my budget's about $600,000 that I need to raise. We are 100% self-funded, meaning that Western gives us in-kind support, not cash. So we're a self-sustaining program that's dependent upon relationships and the outputs that we create to keep us around.
Well, next time I buy a pair of shoes, I'll encourage Steve to kick in something there.
That's great. I appreciate it. Thank you for the vote of confidence, too.
Okay, any more questions for Tom? Okay. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Good presentation. Thank you for coming. Okay, next up is our public hearing on the landscape ordinance, and I'll go to staff.
Mr. Ryan Morrison will be presenting.
Good
Good evening, everyone.
Welcome, sir.
Thank you kindly. So we're here tonight for the final step in the zoning text amendment for landscape ordinance amendments. It's really just kind of like a house cleaning process for the landscape ordinance. It's updating. A couple new zones have been adopted and changed, so we're updating the code to reflect those new zones throughout. There's a couple other little miscellaneous changes in there. And another one of a little more interest is that helps out developers is the addition of our bonding requirements. We always have required a 3-year maintenance bond based on 10% of an overall valuation of a landscape job. As of the last few, year or two, it's been difficult for developers to obtain bonds from banks. Banks just really aren't doing them very much any longer. So we've just added language to allow for accounts of savings accounts, that sort of thing, to cover the costs should we need to go after and replace dead or dying vegetation. So tonight's the public hearing. If it's adopted tonight, it won't go into effect until the state review time period ends, which is late March. And with that, I'll entertain
questions for staff. Okay, seeing none. Thank you, Ryan. I'll open up the public hearing. Public hearing is a formal opportunity to give testimony to the council for consideration in their decision-making process. If you intend to speak, it is necessary to sign at the sign-up sheet on the counter. I don't see anyone signed up. I don't even see a sheet up there, so I guess we're okay. If you wanted to speak without signing up, you can raise your hand after this speech. Written comments will also be submitted to the city clerk prior to the beginning of the hearing. We have none so far. If you wish to speak, proceed to the speaker's rostrum on the microphone, clearly state your name and address. If you're speaking, a representative from another person or organization, so state. State whether you're a proponent, opponent, or neither. Limit your comments to 3 minutes after comments are heard. If you've had something to add that you have not already been stated, at the discretion of the mayor, you'll be given an additional 2 minutes. There'll be no demonstration during the conclusion of anyone's presentation. During the public testimony period of the public hearing, the council, staff, and audience will remain silent. After your presentation, council members may wish to ask you questions. After the last person spoken, the hearing will be closed and the council went to a regular session. The subject of the hearing will usually appear as an agenda item for council decision. These rules are intended to promote an orderly system of holding a public hearing to give every person an opportunity to be heard and ensure that no individuals are embarrassed by exercising the right to free speech. So the public hearing, anyone from the audience would like to speak tonight on this subject? Okay. Rousing response. Okay, I'll close the public hearing portion. Council deliberations or action? Councilperson Metzler?
I move the adoption of Agenda Bill 12-2002 for approval.
Second. Moved and seconded by Councilperson Olson. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries 6-0. Okay, moving. Oh, fine. You get to go home. Thanks for coming. Okay, moving forward, the ordinance on the Main Street eminent domain, and staff will present. Welcome, Katie Ratter.
So I've got an updated ordinance. Staff is recommending City Council. Staff is recommending that City Council approve this ordinance. Basically, the background is that Main Street is listed as our first priority on the city's 6-year transportation improvement plan. Right now, we're currently staff is working on the design. And permitting is including the right-of-way acquisition for the project, and we still plan on going out to bid in April this year. In order to keep the schedule moving forward, we're bringing the ordinance forward for eminent domain, so we have that process in motion should it become necessary in order to obtain the right-of-way we need for the project. So what you have before you is one ordinance. It addresses all properties that we have not yet received final warranty deeds signed for. We wanted to ensure that all properties were listed on the one ordinance in order to keep track of that and then ensure all the steps to allow us to go forward with eminent domain should it be necessary are followed. So the city has sent out written notices to all of the affected property owners, and we've also advertised per the requirements in both the Bellingham Herald and the Ferndale Record Journal. So again, all the property owners that are listed on this ordinance have been invited to this meeting tonight. Let's see. So I guess as an update, you are receiving the most current copy of the ordinance. Since the staff report was drafted, we have signed with two additional property owners. So remaining on the list are five properties in total. That's an easement, four takes, and then a total of four property owners. We do have one signed possession and use agreement, and we believe that the property owner that we're trying to obtain the easement from has signed that easement, and it's checks in the mail, basically easements in the mail. So I think that's about it. You know, this process is, like I said, it's a process. It allows the city to move forward and ensure that the construction schedule isn't delayed. You know, this city staff and our consultants have been talking with the folks that we do need to obtain right away from, and we'll still continue to actively negotiate with them in the ultimate goal of reaching out or reaching a mutually acceptable agreement with the property owner.
Okay, questions for staff? Councilperson Mutchler?
one of my colleagues in ministry, I saw this morning at Woods, and he read the Herald article, and he saw the word condemnation, and he was asking me when the Seventh-day Adventist church would be torn down. So I was wondering if you could explain maybe to folks that the word condemnation sort of is loaded, especially in biblical apocalyptic language, that the word condemnation means a little different in this regard.
Right. Condemnation, the use of eminent domain is kind of an interchangeable term. Basically what it is, you know, the city determines when we start a project what kind of right-of-way we need in order to construct the improvements. And so there's a right-of-way plan developed. And what we do is we work with consultants and we create something called a preliminary funding estimate. And so, you know, depending on the dollar value of the property that needs to be obtained, we either use the preliminary funding estimate where, you know, there's comparable sales that are drawn and we reach a value, or we go out, if it's over a certain dollar amount, then we're required to go get an appraisal. So the city, when we offer, you know, provide our first offer, it's based on, you know, factual information that's supported by recent current sales. And so, you know, we started that process quite a while ago. We send it out to the property owners, and then we contact them, explain the process, you know, see if there's any concerns or questions that the property owner might have. You know, there might be something that we didn't realize when we valued the property, or we didn't consider something when we did the design on the project. So basically, we go through that that process, and once it's exhausted, usually it comes down to price, as all things do. And if we reach a point with a property owner where we're in a deadlock, then basically what you have to do is you have to find an impartial third party. And that's where the eminent domain process comes into play. So if we're not able to reach an agreement, then basically we can take it to the courts and say, you decide. And what that does is that it basically doesn't pigeonhole the city into, you know, say there's a property owner that really doesn't like the project, doesn't want to, you know, negotiate, refuses to, you know, work with you. The way the eminent domain process works is it allows the city to move forward to the courts and say, you know, hey, you're the impartial, the judge, basically. This is what we've offered. This is what this person is requesting. And it allows the process to continue to move through because, you know, these public projects are for the public good. So, you know, condemnation is kind of a severe word, but it's basically a process by which, you know, ultimately you could end up in court and the court decides.
But it should not imply an inferior piece of property or a dangerous piece of property or something worthy of destruction. That's not intended by that.
No, and, you know, a lot of times I think there's a misnomer where, you know, people might think, oh, well, the city's going to take the property, and that's not the case. The property owner, it's, you know, it's determined what a fair price is for that property. So, you know, the property is compensated for.
I'd like to move the adoption of the eminent domain ordinance tonight.
Yeah. I'll second.
Okay, moving second. And we're also having a public comment period. It's not a public hearing, but we've advertised for public comment.
Yeah, it's not if it's public hearing, the property owners have a right to speak.
Correct. So we're going to have a public comment period. But so questions for staff. Councilperson Zimmerman is first.
Yeah, Katie, I've talked with some different people, of course. They've been talking to each other. What is the range? What's the lowest amount per square foot that you're offering, and what's the highest amount?
I don't know that I can get into that because the, you know, the acquisition process, it's not public information until it's complete. So I can't really.
It could be executive session material.
Yeah.
Really?
Purchase property.
Because they're talking about it out there.
Right.
The people. It's
right.
Not, it's not public. You
have to protect taxpayer information.
Seems like that should be a public thing that we should know how much per square foot. Because some of these are already gone.
Only when they've signed and agreed the end of the project. Say, when we purchased right away from you, that became a public document when that project was end, and if somebody wanted to know, okay, how much did you pay Councilperson Zimmerman, it would be public at that point, but not...
It's never public until correct. It's over.
Correct. Sure. Because okay. It's a negotiation. Yeah.
Well, and then if we condemn it first, and you say we're gonna condemn it, and then you're going to go negotiate with the people after it's been condemned? That's what you
okay,
I heard
so
you say.
Yeah, let's explain it again. Is that's a process where the price hasn't been agreed on, and if it went that far, the court would intercede and come to an agreeable price.
But the goal really is to, you know, reach a mutually acceptable price. I mean, you know, what this ordinance does is this allows the city to, you know, take the properties where we're so far apart that, you know, we're probably never going to get to where we need to be, the opportunity to take it to court. You know, of course, if there's, you know, we're looking at the situation all the time. It's like, well, maybe we haven't thought about this. You know, let's look at that. You know, approach the property owner. Is there something that we're not realizing that's important to you that maybe we can accomplish in a different way? You know, that's always the goal.
Yeah, and of course, I would ask about court costs because evidently we've racked up some court costs in this project for this so far.
We haven't gone to court yet, no.
But, so there's been no legal costs so far?
Some legal advice.
Yeah,
legal
we've...
Advice.
Yes, we're trying to keep it to a minimum.
Okay, any other questions for staff? For the public? Okay. Thank you, Katie.
Thanks.
Well, from the public, so anyone would like to speak, I'll go hands first. If anyone would like to speak from the audience. Welcome, sir.
Yeah, hi.
You can come forward again. Now you're a veteran.
You're talking about the condemnation.
So name again.
Fred Rudolph.
Thank you.
Wouldn't it be appropriate to get for the city to get an appraisal on that property, and then for the homeowner to get an appraisal, and then an uninterested person to get an appraisal, and then you go to court. Then the judge knows what he's going to do, an award.
You are exactly correct. That is the process. You are exactly correct.
That's the way it should be.
Yeah. We start with an appraisal and say, okay, here's what the appraisal says. Then the other person could say, well, I disagree with that. Then our request would be, well, okay, can you come up with an appraisal or an expert or something to
justify what this extra expensive. And sometimes they possibly could show that.
Yeah. And the judge has something to work with.
Correct. Yeah. You are correct, sir. Okay, anyone else? Okay, seeing none?
There's a hand.
In this one? You can come forward. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm Nancy Ledford, and I live in Ferndale on the corner of Hilltop and Church. And this eminent domain that you're discussing this evening, does that cover when you're going up Church also, or just your Douglas to Church on Main Street?
The one, it's just the Main Street project.
Okay.
There's the one parcel. But that's not included. It's included on this ordinance, but we would not be moving forward on that through any court process.
So it'd be the one large parcel that's bought down at the bottom of the hill on the corner of Church and Main. Okay. That's included because part of the frontage is on Main.
Right.
So this project is Main Street to Church Road, and then I'll let Katie talk about farther up Main, I guess. Or did you have – does that answer your question or –
Right. I wanted to be sure that I understood that you weren't processing rules for.
We are talking. Obviously, you know, we met with you, and we're talking to homeowners going up Church, but we haven't gone that far on Church yet.
Okay.
We're gonna get Main Street done first.
Thank you.
But the process would be pretty much the same thing by law.
Yeah. Maybe. Yes.
Okay. So when I was talked to about the process, which I guess was last year. I never got any more information. They were going to look at redesigning what they were doing. But so is it time for me to check in with them?
You're on the list. I need to get back in contact with you.
Okay.
Yeah. I forgot about you.
Thank you.
We just have her doing other things right now. She has a construction deadline start of hopefully.
April start?
Yeah.
Bid early April.
So her clock is ticking on Main Street.
Yeah, yeah. Not for you.
Not for you.
on Main Street. On Main Street. Yeah. Anyone else from the audience? Going once? Okay. Council action?
Motion moved in second.
Okay. Any more discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, motion carries 6-0.
Thank you.
You bet. Thank you, Katie. Okay, resolution supporting the Transportation Benefit District came out of committee. Committee chairman was?
Public Works.
Most people voted off.
Okay, so typically we have the committee chairman. Anyone from that committee want to speak on the resolution? Your chairman is not here tonight.
The vice chairman.
Hmm? Houseperson Mutchler?
No, I wasn't on that committee. Sorry about that. No,
well, you wrote the article?
Watson, Hanson, Wood.
Which committee did it come out of?
Public Works.
Public Works.
So does anyone, do you have two members of that committee, Hanson and Watson?
Well, yeah, I'll comment on that.
Houseperson Hanson.
I'd also defer to John because John also was instrumental in bringing this forward. When we placed the item on the ballot, it was nothing more than a placement on the ballot, and we voted yea and nay to place it on the ballot. That was not a vote of support or lack of support. It was just, it's on the ballot. As we did a couple of meetings ago, we passed a resolution that said that this council supports the school district levy. And this is essentially the same thing, except it's saying this council supports our own proposition. And John, you can fill in further on that because you were instrumental in bringing this forward.
Okay, so I'll go to Councilperson Mutchler and then back to Watson. Okay. Councilperson Mutchler?
Yeah, thank you. I guess I think a lot of us assume that the citizens would just assume that most of council was supportive of this, but I can't necessarily assume that because, we just simply pushed it on the ballot of supporting that. Council Member Olson voted to place on the ballot for November, but not necessarily implying support of the ballot itself. But what kind of drove this for me was the headlines in the Herald. This is not a shot at the Herald. I know that, you know, sometimes headlines are done in a rushed manner or space manner. And this is the same headline for the same article. The online version says that Ferndale leaders are at odds over the sales tax ballot. And I don't know if we really are at odds. And that's what the headline said. The same article came out in the print version. It's a slightly different heading. It says, City Council is split on proposed sales tax increase. Again, City Council is split on proposed sales tax increase. I don't know this for certain, but I'm under the impression that of 8 elected officials, 7 of them are in support of this measure. I could be wrong about that, but my impression is that 7 of the 8, including the mayor, elected officials are in support of that. So I thought it would be good to go on record of supporting this measure of increasing the sales tax by 0.2%. In light of that, in also in light of the whereases that are listed that the staff put together, I'd like to vote the approval of Agenda Bill 12-2004, which is a statement of support by this council in support of the ballot measure Proposition 1 for February 14th.
I'd like to second the motion.
Okay, second. And then I'll go to you for comments.
I guess for me personally, I wasn't on the council when you did the TBD or put it on the ballot, so I thought it was important for everyone to know that I am in favor of the sales tax. I sat through a lot of budget meetings this fall, looked through the budget, and I personally didn't see any other way for us to fix our streets. I mean, nobody wants to ask people to pay more taxes. You really don't. But I didn't see where we were going to find $300,000 to be able to fix our streets. And I do hope that anyone who doesn't think we should be doing this can at least come up with a way for us to get that $300,000, because I just don't know how else to do it. If you have another way to do it, then now's your chance to speak.
Councilperson Ingram and then Zimmerman.
Well, I think it's important for people to understand the fact that this is the only way that we have been able to find that spreads the burden out over everybody, not just the citizens of Ferndale. Any other thing that we do is only going to affect the citizens who live within the city limits of Ferndale. This affects everybody from the Canadians that come down here to shop at Hagen's or to buy tires at Les Schwab, or the people that come up here from other parts of the county for whatever reason to shop in Ferndale. It spreads that tax burden out and makes it a lot less onerous to me for the citizens who live in Ferndale.
I think there's any discrepancy of support on, viewed from my standpoint, it was just the timing of it. That's something I didn't, you know, wasn't 100% in agreement with. Because we originally put about November, and then we moved up to February, and that was the only thing I wished. But I agree with Paul. This is the takes the least amount of bite out of everyone here locally, and it spreads it out over, you know, even our lovely Canadians, they get to help us with it. So that's wonderful.
Councilperson Olson?
I think voting is a personal matter, and I don't support motions to either not support or support them. So I'll be abstaining as I did with the last one.
Okay. Councilperson Mutchler?
I forgot to add when I was referencing the Bellingham Herald was that this was a front-page statement by the Herald, which I guess I thought was a little bit unfortunate just because elections in Ferndale tend to be close. And I'm not going to say this will sink it. I don't think it will, because I think it will pass. But I was just concerned that a statement that indicated that when it says city council split, I guess I consider a split 4-3 or maybe 5-2. But, again, I'm starting to hear there's a pretty solid council support. Even I believe the city clerk can correct me if I'm wrong. I believe even Councilmember Brent Goodrich, who was not here tonight, went on record at the committee to say he was in support of this measure as well. He can't vote tonight, but
right.
So I think there's pretty strong support, and I hope that the Herald will consider reporting it as such, if that's what happens tonight.
Okay, Council, it looks like all discussion's done for you. I don't know if anyone in the audience wanted to speak on this subject. It's not advertised as such, so that would be up to the Council if you would allow public comment.
Certainly.
I see a one kind of yes.
Mm-hmm.
I see a two
kind
of yes. I see a three yes. Okay, I see a 4 or 5 yes. Okay. So we'll open up to public comment about this subject. Thank you, Council. Anyone from the audience would like to come forward and speak on this subject? We have a giantly active audience tonight that really wants to discuss things. Okay, Council, so you have a motion on the floor and a second. Councilperson Mutchler?
Yeah, I think that our council rules imply to me that we do have we allow the public to comment on things, because we always say you comment on things that aren't on the agenda at the beginning. So I think it's appropriate, and I
always
hope,
nice
we,
to ask
hope that we do that more.
Okay, all in favor of the motion? We know we have one abstention, so all in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, and then one abstention, so motion carries.
Okay, moving right along, you are moving rapidly along. The high school students are going to be excited to go home and do all their homework. Capital Projects, police station.
Continue to progress well. Right now we're thinking that substantial completion, which technically means that the building is feasible and could be used for its intended occupation, is scheduled for about the third week in March. So we're about a month and a week or so away from having the building substantially done. The landscaping, as you may be, I'm not the landscaping, the civil portion, that's the parking lot and the outside, the building work. That is out to bid, and we're going to be opening bids here relatively soon. That'll be started, of course, once we get some good bids and weather somewhat related. The last portion of the last bid package, if you will, which will go out sometimes after the civil work is done, is the landscaping and the fencing and some of the other minor outdoor areas. But we're now down to the point where the lockers are getting to be established and ordered and delivered, and the ceiling grid is starting to go in, and we're really, the painting's completed. They actually started their tile. The bathrooms are now tiled, so we're getting down to really the building is starting to really take its shape, and you can really start to see one area from another.
Going to get a walkthrough pretty soon?
Yeah, we planned
We have the council tour, and we hope to have room on that.
22nd, right?
February 22nd.
So we hope that is on the tour, so we hope to work that in. Councilor Zimmerman was first, and then Councilperson Watson.
Being on the Public Safety Committee previous years, and I've worked on many job sites, and never, ever were we allowed to leave ladders up against the building because they're just such an attractive nuisance for kids to sneak around and crawl up there. And I've seen that numerous times, and, you know, it's not my job to interfere with them over there. But if you could relay that to them, I just think it's an L&I thing and everything else. It's just too attractive for kids to get up on top of that ladder.
That fence isn't razor wire. It could be jelly.
Well, yeah, I see a sneak so kids squished over.
Good.
Councilperson Watson.
Where are we on costs?
Costs, Corvacuccio contract was about $2.7 million. Mm-hmm. And right now we have established change orders and potential change orders totaling about $220,000. So we're a little bit below 10%. When you have a building that's both a remodel and an addition and something as complex as a police department, I think that's certainly, I think, within the realm of what we had anticipated. Actually, it's considerably less than what our contingency, overall contingency is. But for this phase of the project, we've been pretty pleased.
So we're still under the contingency.
Absolutely.
Okay. That's exactly right. Six was
contingency.
Five.
Okay, do we still want to do Main Street? Or could you talk about Main Street? Do you want to do a review of Main Street? Okay. Well, might as well come up because the next one's you, so we'll just keep you up here for a while.
Yeah, Main Street is, plugging along. We're still working on the right-of-way acquisition, obviously, design and permitting. And then we're still on schedule for the April bid.
Great. Okay. So next up is Church.
Yeah, Church Road, we're kind of gearing up on the right-of-way acquisition activities. Again, meeting with property owners is always great, but it is time-consuming. So we'll start to do that some more. We actually had a property owner sign today, so that was good. And,
for Church?
Mm-hmm.
For Church?
So, yeah, that's about it.
Okay, sidewalks?
Okay. So the sidewalks are pretty much wrapped up. The only work that we have left to do will be completed by the city, and that includes the pavement markings. And then in order to, you know, meet the requirements for the DOE and erosion control and all that sort of stuff, we had to hydroseed. So we hydroseeded with some winter growing vegetation. So we'll likely have to reseed in the spring when it'll take. And then I just wanted to report briefly on the construction. Council authorized, you know, construction contract amount plus the small contingency wasn't quite 10%, just over $272,000. And so what we spent with our contract with Larry Brown Construction was just over $267,000. So we were within our budget on the construction portion.
Can you say that again?
We were within our budget on the construction portion.
Oh, did you hear that? We're within our budget. Councilperson Negro?
Okay, I just wanted you to know that last week at our Ferndale Kiwanis meeting, one of the people, that one of our members that was there, lives along Malloy and is absolutely ecstatic to have sidewalks. He loves it. Said it was a great project.
Yeah, the property owners adjacent to that project were just great. Really good. So
it's nice to see so many people walking on.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Great. Okay, Griffintown.
Okay. Good news on Griffintown. We finalized the last pay estimate to the contractor today. So all that work is done. There's some, you know, final miscellaneous paperwork stuff that we have to complete in order to fully close out the project. But we've got a pretty good handle on what our costs were. So when we initially went out to bid, council allowed us to add in the alternate work as part of the bid. And so with the contingency, council authorized around $543,000 for the construction portion. So during construction, you run into things that you're not really expected to find or you want to fix. And so as part of the construction, we were able to replace two what we call burp tanks with brand new manholes. And we were also able to add about 80 feet of pipe to replace a section of sewer along Portal Way that actually had backfall in it. So with all that said and done, we spent $412,000 on the construction, which is pretty significantly under our budget.
Okay, for note clarification, so you're saying that that work was above and beyond what was initially planned?
Right.
Okay.
We added work.
Is there any different subject? Is there any movement on the Veterans Memorial up in Bender Park?
Yes, in fact, they submitted a pre-TRC application. Yuri could probably answer this better than I can. And so it's scheduled to go to pre-TRC and then TRC later this month. So they're moving forward on that.
Okay, any other questions for Katie on project update? Great news. It's been a while since someone has stood before you and told you about two projects that are under budget, and then the police station is still under budget. So an impressive trend. My wife thinks it's because we hired Katie. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Thanks, Katie.
I think your wife is right.
Sometimes my wife is right. Community development work plan.
So we've been trying to bring this before council for a discussion since the beginning of the year, because so far the Community Development Department hasn't had anything to work on. So we've been waiting for you to tell us what to work on for 2012. So we have a list of a number of different projects that we could be working on. That's on pages 128 to 132. But at Council's direction, we've identified seven projects that we feel as staff should be worked on immediately, with the other ones kind of filling in the cracks and then following on these primary ones. Planned action ordinance, obviously you all know about that. We have a public hearing tentatively scheduled for that on March the 5th. Our planning commission is going to hold their public hearing next Wednesday. The park plan update, that's the comprehensive park revisions. Many of those park revisions were found on your must should could list, and so We have already been in discussions with the Parks Board about the manner in which they want to start considering it. It would then go through the Planning Commission, probably a couple of open houses to council. Code scrub, that's a variety of going through the Ferndale Municipal Code and identifying areas similar to what we did with the landscaping ordinance, where we can clarify things, not too many policy changes, more just clarifications, something that, as we heard from Center for Economic Vitality, when you're in a recession, you can sometimes find the ability to come back up to speed. Concurrency ordinance, another big one that is more complicated than it might sound sometimes, but we are taking steps to reduce our consultant fees by basically writing the ordinance ourselves and asking them to look at it and verify that it's good. Downtown rezoning, and I was actually going to talk about this a little bit later, but I'll talk about it now. On March the 1st at 2 p.m., we're having what we might be tentatively calling 2,000 steps to revitalizing downtown. 2,000 steps are about the number of steps that you would take in a mile, and we're proposing a walking tour of approximately a mile through downtown Ferndale from 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock, giving people the chance to not just talk about what downtown could be philosophically, but actually point at certain places and say, this is what I can see happening or this is what I can see needing to change. So that's March the 1st, and we're coordinating with the Ferndale Downtown Association, the Chamber, and the Ferndale Economic Development Committee.
We'll meet right here and then walk and then come back and kind of download opinions. So we'll
time
meet.
Again?
What day is that?
Thursday.
That's March.
So we'll meet here, walk, and then come back here.
March 1st?
That'll be good. March 1st.
March 1st. And it depending on the success of it, we may be able to find the opportunity to do another one when it stays late later. Stays light later.
Lightly.
And this is a rain or shine event?
Or snow.
Or snow.
Or wind.
No snow.
The mayor has great faith in the community of being able to decide what to wear.
I think people in Northwest know how to walk around in inclement weather. Councilperson Ingram.
Yori, I'm just curious. We closed that alleyway off by Lindell Glass.
Mm-hmm.
Are we still going to be proposing other alley closures as we go forward in this year? I saw something that was so scary the other day. I went to our new barbershop, by the way, if you haven't been, he's good. And there's an alleyway that comes up by, I parked in the back lot back here. And I walked out in through the alley, and I got my haircut. I was going back to the car, and there was a delivery semi for True Value Hardware. And he was coming out of that alley, and the driver was looking in his mirrors trying not to rip building things off. And if the mommy hadn't been really vigilant, he'd have flattened a three-year-old. Because he didn't see anything in front of his truck. He was so concentrated on his mirrors, and this kid's mom just reached out and pulled him back, and the truck went right in front of him. It's a dangerous situation coming out of those alleys with a semi. I mean, that's just
probably a good thing to avoid on a walking tour. Mm-hmm. Great mm-hmm. example of a walking tour.
Yeah. And one of the reasons why we're doing it during business hours is so we don't see Ferndale with all its makeup and the pretty sunshine and all that. So we see it where it needs issues or problems solved. It wears makeup. It does, Sam. next, the annexation blueprint. We've talked a little bit about that. That is basically an annexation phasing plan, how we are going to plan for our urban growth area. We feel that there's the opportunity to do it because the county has pulled back for many reasons because of lack of staff, also for ongoing legal difficulties that the county has had. It's the opportunity and really the responsibility staff feels for the city to plan for its own urban growth area. And so we've been working on the interlocals, as you know, to help to ensure that the city inherits something that's good and able to be developed to city standards. But planning ahead so we don't extend our facilities or utilities out beyond what would be self-supporting and self-sustaining. Next, multifamily density and minimum density discussions. This is a subject that has come up periodically. in fits and starts. We're wanting to focus on the concepts of really what do we expect our multifamily zones to act like? Do we want to establish minimum densities in them or in other areas in order to make sure that we do achieve the densities that we want? And other mechanisms that could take place.
Are you planning any type of, like, your residential eagle, like a multifamily eagle?
We could, and that's – residential eagle is something that is not included on these seven, just because I personally feel that if we do go with residential eagle, that I've heard at various times seven different or more than seven different ideas of what residential eagle could be. In order to make us as efficient staff-wise as possible, if we do want to proceed with residential eagle or if we go through one of these and recognizing that residential eagle, whatever it is, would follow, we need to come up with a purpose statement of what residential eagle would be. Because I think that the community and the staff and the council and the planning commission can come up with whatever would match that purpose statement, but if we have seven different ones, there's no way that we would. So wanting to hear from council where that would fall in the priority list, because we could certainly – we could bump one of these. We could start working on residential eagle, but then the question would be, is that above neighborhood commercial zone, for instance? Is it below this? That's something that we need to figure out so that if we bring –
That would be a good chat to have with our joint meeting with the Planning Commission.
Yes, it would. Yes, it would. What we're basically asking for you right now is, are these top seven – your top seven as well? Are you comfortable with those top seven?
Yes.
And
you need a motion to that effect?
Nope.
No.
Just a head nod.
If you like it, Gary, you're the man.
Yeah,
I think this is great. And would it help you with the commission if there was a motion or just a...
No, this is great. This is what we're already working on.
Yeah.
It's not a change of direction. The one thing I would add, though, is we will bring in other things as time allows that might not be of the top seven or might be ones that legally we have to do. The interlocal agreement's a good example. It's not on the top seven, but we are going to bring it back to
you. Since we're in an even number year election, I'm not worried about this, but when we get to another off-year election, I really – want to commend us to tidy up that campaign sign thing so it's not – and then we do it several months before the election so it's not tied into it, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, any more questions for Yuri on this?
Thank you, Council.
There's a lot of work on this list, a lot of work. So great, thank you for bringing up because that combined meeting is something that we're doing. There is some heavy lifting on this list.
Okay, we'll go to mayor reports. First of all, you might remember last year that we were, City of Ferndale, led by our police department, was part of a nationwide grant program where we would compete by collecting used cell phones. And it was a great thing because we were neck and neck in competition with the City of Los Angeles.
And we beat
Whatcom County, thanks to our police chief and a lot of other people, we beat the City of Los Angeles. We got a $10,000 grant to help domestic violence control, and that grant was used to further fund the person that works out right next door in terms of our court. So it was a great grant. Our police chief has basically put his hand on the table and said, we will win again. And so this is the first. He's collecting all the boxes. If you have cell phones, if you have old cell phones, get them to us, any sort of cell phone. I think we have some cell phones laying around City Hall that look like they were from 1981.
Star Wars.
Yeah, they were about that big. Or a lot of flip phones. High school students, anyone, we would love, I think it would be significant if Whatcom County beat Los Angeles again so the gauntlet is down there. So it's a great job. So somebody mentioned our city tour of city facilities. Wednesday, 22nd, we'll be using the prisoner bus. It's not a luxurious bus. Dress warmly. We'll be going through the water and sewer plants. We'll be going through City Hall. Lunch isn't provided. The budget doesn't allow that, so bring a peanut butter sandwich.
22nd.
9 a.m., correct?
We're going to start at 9 a.m. KeyBank this Thursday is a ribbon cutting celebrating their remodel, so you're all welcome. It's the Chamber of Commerce. What a great story is that we have the very, as you walk into City Hall, the first person in the county is our utility billing clerk. That's a tough position. That person collects all the money sometimes from customers and aren't happy about paying for bills. And so we had a person that resigned from that position. And I'm taking some thunder from our finance director who's not here, but we advertised the permission position. Last Friday, they did a round of interviews, a unanimous choice. We basically have all the employees from downstairs who are going to work with this new person, interview this person so we get a good fit. Outstanding qualification. One person rose to the top. The reason why I'm bringing it up is I'm really proud because I like when things like this happen. It's a Ferndale High graduate that has went out to the world and is coming back. His name is Addison Perrin, so he's a Ferndale High graduate. So it's nice to see, hey, you can go to the world and come back to help your city. So he has what I would say is the second best smile in Ferndale. So come in and say hi to Addison. He's got a great smile.
First smile is me.
Okay, so you already mentioned the city walking tour. So that's it for mayor reports. Council reports. Councilor Zimmerman was first.
There is on the 21st and 23rd, there's a Whatcom County Emergency Management meeting, which will be hosted by Bellingham, and they'll tell us what to do in case of emergency. But we're all, I guess, invited. So there's going to be two sessions that we'll see in case of hurricane, tsunami, and those type of things. I'm sure the chief will be there.
Great. Councilperson Hansen was next.
Back before Lloyd took over as the liaison for the parks committee, one of the projects that they've been working on were the installation of logs with a brass plaque on top over at the Griffintown Park. And today was actually the first day that I stopped in and took a look at those. There are now 8 historical plaques, or 8. The plaques aren't historical, but the subjects of the plaque are historical. Those are the 8 that were selected by a committee that local citizens prior to 1900. The next group would be 1900 to 1950, I believe, and then the tough one, which would be 1950 to the present. Identifying and putting a short vignette of a historical character. The Rogers brothers are over there. Miss Etheridge or Eldridge, whatever her name was, that actually named the town Ferndale back in the 1800s. And so stop by and take a look. They're beautifully done. Odie's Precast came up with a design, and they're put together. They're pretty schooling. It would be really tough for somebody to take them apart. So they look nice. It'd be a real nice addition to that.
Councilperson Watson is next.
The Ferndale Public Market is starting to take vendor applications, and they're going to try and do a Wednesday market in July and August in the afternoon between, like, I know you're excited, sweet, between, like, 2 and 7. But it's going to be dependent on how many vendors. Was that sexist?
If I'd done that, it would have been sexist.
That's right. So don't.
So, I didn't hear it say that.
Okay. It's going to be between Wednesdays, between 2 and 7, but it's only going to be if they have enough vendors who want to do it on Wednesdays. So if you know of any vendors who perhaps can't do it on Saturdays, have them go to Ferndale Public Market.
So if they decide for sure to do a Wednesday, or if it's if they get enough vendors?
If they get enough vendors.
Okay.
Because right now we only have 2 people who can do
it
on
Wednesdays. So it would be a great front page article by the papers.
That's not how it works, but you can give it your best shot. That's all. Thank you.
Any other council reports? Councilperson Ingram, and then Mutzler, and then Zimmerman.
I would ask Council Member Hansen if he could take my finance and admin committee meeting next Wednesday.
Sure.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you for doing that. Councilperson Mutzler?
Yeah, this is a little bit in regard to my church. I finally found documentation that dated my church building, our church building, and it's 1900, which is kind of old. And so I'm offering it under the premise that we may be the oldest building in Ferndale. I don't know that for sure, so I'm going to kind of put it out there, see if someone can find something older than 1900.
Yeah, you might be.
So
you might be right.
And the original name of that place before we got the building in '89, but it was and before us it was called Bakerview Baptist Church. But before that it was called the First Swedish Baptist Church of West Ferndale. That was its incorporated name.
West,
and
it was Ferndale.
West, they had aspirations of every corner. So.
Say it again. First?
The first Swedish church. Excuse me. The first Swedish Baptist Church of West Ferndale was the name of the church. And that was in Sweden.
Did the sign and took up the whole church. What a great story. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. So I'd be curious. If someone knew of an older building, I'd love to hear about it.
Okay.
Before we start bragging.
Councilperson Zimmerman.
Being ever proud of our youth, our freshman C team in basketball went undefeated 15-0 this year, playing the likes of Linden and Burlington and Anacortes. They're the only team between here and Seattle to do that, and there was only 60 on the whole West Coast. So it's good for them.
Great job. Okay, good job. Any other council reports? No? Okay, we'll go to staff reports. City Administrator.
Nothing.
Community Development Director.
Nothing.
City Clerk.
Nothing.
Public Works.
Nothing.
Police. Okay. I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed. We are adjourned. High school, come up here and sign your
name. You're on. Yes, sir. Oh, wow. Okay.